Canadian women's hockey.
Bouncing puck in front, Spooner with two chances. Centering pass scores! Marie-Philippe Poulin!
This is CWHL Over the Glass with your host, Jared Vapti, on barnburner.ca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of CWHL Over the Glass with yours truly. And I understand that this show is a little bit later than it usually is, but I had a surprisingly busy March break, and I actually didn't have a whole lot of time to record anything. And now I'm back at school, and I thought, hey, the studio's open, so why not make it sound a little nicer, sound a little better? So here we are. I'm in the studio, and everything sounds nice, and so we're gonna go for it. First of all, we'll get right into the Clarkson Cup matchup, because I think we already know who won and lost by this point. The Clarkson Cup is coming up this Sunday at noon from the Coca-Cola Center, formerly the Rico Coliseum. It's actually called the Coca-Cola Coliseum. It's still a Coliseum, but just a different first name, Coca-Cola, instead of Rico. That's where it's going to be, and it's going to be Montreal against Calgary. Now, these two teams, the way the league works, obviously, each team plays each other at least six times. So Calgary and Montreal did play each other six times, and Calgary went 4-2 on that in that series. So they won four games and lost two. But the scoring was pretty even throughout the series. Maybe some games were higher scoring than others, but Calgary had 16 goals in the series and Montreal had 14. So it should be a very, very exciting game on Sunday afternoon. Of course, these two teams being the top two teams in the league. So what more could you ask for, really? And it'll be a very good one. But now let's take a look at how they got there. Montreal had to go through Markham and Toronto, or Calgary had to go through Toronto to then come back to Toronto, because all three games were in Calgary. And we'll start with that series because we're in Toronto. And the Furies actually won the first game. They had a six-game win streak capped off by a win in Game 1 against Calgary. It was 3-1, and it was a very good game for the Furies. They did only muster up 18 shots on net to Calgary's 34, but the final score was 3-1, and Shea Tiley was absolutely sensational in net, stopping 33 of 34 shots. And of course, on offense, the hero was Natalie Spooner. She got the two goals, the two first goals for the Furies. Bridget Laquette got the lone goal for Calgary, and they actually opened the scoring in the second period. But then Spooner came back with two goals of her own, and that second goal ended up being the game winner. And then Sarah Nurse scored right at the beginning of the third period on the power play, and that really put the game away. And it kind of looked like Toronto just sort of sat back from there. They only got four shots in the third period to Calgary's 13. So maybe a little bit of score effects happening. It could have been also to do with some of the penalties. Toronto took three penalties. They ended up having a 5-on-3 at one point, kind of later in the game too. Or sorry, 5-on-4, excuse me. But like that's kind of what happens, right? That's what score effects is, and it certainly happened a little bit. And couple that with the power plays that Calgary had. They had a couple, so they had a 4-on-3, and they had another power play. Brittany Howard went off for slashing. But Natalie Spooner was the first star of the game. Shea Tiley, second star of the game, of course. So Toronto had the opportunity to upset the first place team in the CWHL on the following Saturday, and they lost 3-0. It was a hard fought game for the Furies, but I mean Calgary just came out swinging 42-13 with the shots on net. They just absolutely pelted poor Shea Tiley, who got the back-to-back start, 39 of 41 still for her, which is still a pretty decent save percentage, because she only let in three, and all the scoring came in the third period. So the first two periods, pretty even, pretty back and forth, couple of penalties on either side, and then in the third period, Calgary just ran away with it. Despite the power play opportunities that that Calgary had, they didn't score on the power play, which is kind of mind-blowing. But there you have it. Rebecca Johnston ended up getting the game winner because it was the first goal, and that was the only goal that they ultimately needed. So Johnston got the first star. Blair Turnbull and Brianne Jenner got the other two goals. And then, of course, the third game, Toronto fighting for their playoff lives, and they fought hard, but eventually ended up losing 4-1. Again, getting heavily outshot by Calgary, 35-18 in that game. But they did score one goal. Elaine Chooley got the start because, I mean, poor Shea Tiley. Could you imagine going three straight games with 30-plus shots in each one of them? So Elaine got the start, 31-34 in this one. Still, again, not too bad of a save percentage. And Calgary opened the scoring in this one in the first period, late, very late in the first period. Caroline Prevo tied the game up for Toronto, but then Brianne Jenner got Calgary the lead again later in the period. Prevo's goal was earlier, Jenner's goal was later, and then the third period again, Calgary just ended up running away with it, getting two more goals and putting it away and moving on. Now, what is interesting about this one is that there were only four penalties in the whole game, whereas in other games there were four penalties in each period. So the three teams, the two teams seem to have cleaned things up a little bit in this third game, and it at least certainly benefited Calgary. Even though Calgary ended up with three penalties to Toronto's one, but unfortunately Toronto couldn't capitalize on any of those three power plays. Prevost's goal was an even strength goal. And as far as the stars go, Brianne Jenner was the first star because, of course, her goal, that 2-1 goal, was the game winner. Decker with a couple of goals herself. Brianna Decker with the first and the third goal. And then Blair Turnbull was the third star with the assist on Jenner's game winner. And then we'll take a look at the other series very quickly, Montreal and Markham. And Montreal had Markham on the ropes early with a 3-0 game one win. Again, you'll see throughout this. I'll talk about it at the end, actually. That's what I'll do. So 3-0 was the score in game one, 34-13 with the shots on net in favor of Les Canadiens. And Erica Howe have just played incredibly throughout this series. She started in this one and stopped 31-34, which is a great performance. But Emerson Mashmeyer got the shutout, stopped all 13 shots, and so this was a fairly one-sided game. Montreal had a goal in each period, and Markham ended up taking four penalties in the first period just because they were so hemmed in their own zone all the time. It was a really hard game for them. They had six shots on goal in the first period, and then it just tapered off from there. Four in the second, and just three in the third. So almost the opposite of score effects in this one, just because they just couldn't get anything going. And even when they had two power plays in the third period, still just unable to get anywhere offensively in this game. So Mashmeyer got the first star with her 13 save shutout. Catherine Daou got the second star with a goal and assist. And Melody Daou got the third star with a goal. Now, Montreal had the opportunity to sweep the series, go two straight games, have a break before they came to Toronto for the Clarkson Cup final. But Markham said, "No, sir, no, ma'am. We will not have any of that." They won 4-3, got 20 shots on net, 43 shots on net for Montreal, though. Erica Howe got the start again in this one, and so did Emerence Mashmeyer. Mashmeyer stopping just 16 of 20, so not one of her better games, but some of the goals, again, they weren't necessarily clean looks. So that just happens sometimes, right? The puck goes off a stick, off a skate, off a body, and into the back of the net, and that's just the way it goes. And that's kind of how this one ended up. Some lucky bounces for Markham, and that's what you got to do to stay alive in the playoffs. You take advantage of the opportunities presented to you, and Erica Howe certainly did, stopping 40 of 43 shots. Another stellar performance for Erica Howe. And Markham actually jumped to a 3-0 lead in this one. They scored two in the first, both scored by Jenna McParland. And then the third one, she had a hat-trick. Jenna McParland, three goals in a row. The third goal came in the second period, and that one was on the power play. And then Hillary Knight came back, got one for Montreal, but then Markham said, nope, get away with that. Away with you. Ella Matucci got the fourth one for Markham, and then Montreal scared them a little bit, I would think. Two late goals in the third period with less than 2 minutes left to play. Hillary Knight for her second of the game, and then Carol Aimard got a late, late goal with about 1:08 left to play. So I'm sure Markham got a little anxious there, but Erica Howe and the Thunder managed to hang on and win this one, forcing a game three. Jenna McParland, of course, getting the second star of the game with her hat trick. Erica Howe, the first star of the game. Two players that really carried that team in that game. And then Hillary Knight had a good performance herself for Les Canadiennes, getting two goals and an assist. So we go to game three back at, I mean, all three games were also in Montreal. You feel kind of bad for these two Toronto teams. Can't get any playoff games in the GTA, but that is the way it is. And Montreal, well, they came to play again in this third one. 5-0 was the score in favor of Les Canadiennes. 34-17 were the shots on net, also in favor of Montreal. Erica Howe got the start in this one again. She must have been exhausted this past Monday, about a week ago now. Holy cow, three games in a row, and all three of them she faced 30-plus shots on net, 40 in the second, more than 40 in the second game, and then in this one, another 34 shots. She stopped 29 of them. Maybe some fatigue showing in that one. You know, I would have maybe debated putting in Liz Knox for maybe even the first or second one. I know Markham they didn't really use Liz as a starter. She was more of the backup to Erica Howe, but maybe even just to give Erica a day off. I don't know. That's just kind of my thinking. Because three games in a row is hard for anybody in any sport. I mean, even tennis, you know, tennis players get a break usually in between bigger matches, right? They get a day off and then they're back on for the semifinal and then they get a day off or sometimes even 2 days off and then they're back for the final, right? But Emerin Smashmeyer didn't get a break in this one either, stopped all 17 shots. I mean, there again, you know, a bit of a lighter load for Emerin Smashmeyer, but that's how it goes. Now a lot of the scoring came in the second period in this one. Melody Daou opened the scoring about midway through the first, but Jill Saulnier got things going again with the second goal of the game. Lauriane Rougeau, Hillary Knight, and Tracy Ann Lavigne all scored for Montreal. So the scoring was spread throughout the lineup. Hillary Knight got the first star with a goal and an assist. Melody Daou with a goal and two assists. And then Lauriane Rougeau also third star with a goal and an assist. So a pretty decent playoff showing for both Hillary Knight and Melody Daou. And actually, I guess a little bit of a surprise, I would say, for some fans is the lack of Marie-Philippe Poulin. She actually didn't even play in this third game. So I'm not exactly sure why that is. So I just took a quick break to try and figure out exactly why Marie-Philippe Poulin wasn't playing for Montreal in that first series. And I can't Can't seem to figure out why exactly she wasn't playing. So I'm sure somebody would be able to tell me, and I'm interested to look into it a little bit more and find out. But anyway, Montreal without their without their captain, without their best player, and without the top player in the CWHL for that series, but ended up winning that one and moving on, as we all know. So speaking of Marie-Philippe Poulin, it was announced that she, of course, is the winner of the Angela James Bowl as the top scorer in the league. She got 50 points this season, 23 goals, 27 assists, and she's only the fourth player on Montreal to do so in franchise history. On top of that, this is her third straight win of this award, and Poulin also had 6 game-winning goals, which led the league in that category. So she's the current Captain Canada. She took over from, there's been so many fantastic women playing for Canada, and Marie-Philippe Poulin has really filled those shoes so well, as she continues to demonstrate throughout her CWHL career as well. As I said with that one to start, I'm going to go through the CWHL award nominees. Some of them obviously we already know, as we know with that one. And then the second one we already know is the Chairman's Trophy, which is awarded to the regular season champions. And that is, of course, the Calgary Inferno capturing this for the second time in franchise history. And they got their first place finish. They clinched in the final weekend of the regular season because we still weren't really sure who was going to come out on top with the way Les Canadiens were playing. But they ended up not catching Calgary. They ended up 4 points out of first place, and Calgary clinched first place in the CWHL with a 25-4-1 record. All right, continuing right on with now the nominated awards, and we'll start with Rookie of the Year. This was a pretty good category to be a part of, and even there's a snub or two that I might mention as well. But the three nominees are Rebecca Leslie of the Calgary Inferno, Victoria Bach of the Markham Thunder, and Sarah Nurse of the Toronto Furies. So Rebecca Leslie was drafted in the second round by the Calgary Inferno. She played 27 games this season and earned 26 points, so just shy of a point per game player. She finished fourth in the team's standings and 11th overall in points with 11 goals and 15 assists. Now for Victoria Bach, and I think Bach has the strongest case for this award. She was obviously the first round draft pick of the Markham Thunder this year. She was fourth overall in points, finishing the season with 32. And of course, that was 19 goals and 13 assists that she got that from. But she also had 5 game-winning goals, which was second in the league behind Poulin. 6 power play goals, which tied her for the league lead with the third nominee in this category. Victoria Bach only had 6 penalty minutes, which was the lowest in this category. So I think there's quite a case for Victoria Bach to be the winner of the Rookie of the Year. But the other one who has, I think, a good case as well is Sarah Nurse. She was drafted by the Toronto Furies in the first round, and that was second overall as well. And she led the way for the Furies in this year, 14 goals and 12 assists, finishing 9th overall in points in the CWHL with 26. She also had 4 game-winning goals behind Bach, 6 power play goals, as I mentioned, tying Bach for the league lead in power play goals, and about 16 penalty minutes. So that was a little bit higher on the spectrum as far as penalty minutes go. But I mean, both these players, Bach and Nurse, obviously are clutch in the game-winning goal and power play goal perspective. They're scoring, taking advantage of being on the power play, and then also scoring when the team needed it most. Now, the snub that I mentioned, I think, for Rookie of the Year, I'm very curious as to why Alex Rigsby was not nominated for Rookie of the Year. I would almost have put her ahead of Rebecca Leslie, and that's nothing against Rebecca Leslie, of course, but Alex, now Alex is nominated for Goaltender of the Year. I'm going to get to that in a few moments, but she is, of course, very good. She has been a sensational goaltender this season, and I wouldn't necessarily not nominate her for Goaltender of the Year, but I would have definitely nominated her for Rookie of the Year, personally. Just me, just my opinion. Rebecca Leslie had a very good season as well, but I would put Alex Rigsby in there over Rebecca Leslie. So Defenseman of the Year, we got three nominees in this category as well. Casey Bellamy, will start with her of the Calgary Inferno. She got 21 points this season in 26 games, making her the highest scoring defenseman on the Inferno. And she also had, interesting stat, she also had the lowest number of even strength goals against with 10. Now, the other two nominees in this category, Erin Ambrose and Laura Fortino, neither of them have a stat like that attached to their little blurb on the CWHL award nominees page on the site. And it's very difficult to find defensive stats for the CWHL. If somebody knows where to find them, I would love to have that insight. But I looked a little bit today and I couldn't find anything too concrete, so that is a very good stat for me. I like the idea of the Defenseman of the Year as a all-round defenseman award, and the NHL has that kind of that same problem where the Norris ends up getting awarded to basically the top scoring defenseman, which isn't, in my opinion, what the Defenseman of the Year award means. And it certainly wasn't what the original meaning of the Norris was. And I would think that the winner of this award in the CWHL would represent both offense and defense. And to me, now, I haven't even said how good of a season Ambrose and Fortino have had, but I would say that Bellamy has the greatest case for this award simply because of that stat right there, the lowest number of even strength goals against. So she is very good at defending 5-on-5, which means that she's keeping people to the outside. She's not letting them cut to the slot and get good high danger scoring chances, which is key in hockey, no matter what level, what league you play in. And that is defending 101, right? So she is doing that and has done that all year round. I think she has the best case. But anyway, Erin Ambrose, she had her best season in the CWHL. 26 games, 24 points in those 26 games, 6 goals and 18 assists. And she is, of course, very capable offensively. She was the highest scoring defenseman in the league. And then the third one, Laura Fortino from Markham. This season, Fortino, She was very strong for the Markham Thunder, 18 points in 26 games, and she ended the regular season with 5 goals and 13 assists. Now, something again that I want to mention as far as kind of underground stats that they don't always talk about as much, and a reason why I think Laura Fortino might have a bit of a stronger case as well for this award. Fortino only had 4 penalty minutes. Now, there's not too many ladies in the league that have a whole lot of penalty minutes, but most of them are in the double digits, and Laura has 4, and I think that is worth noting as well. Now, granted, Casey Bellamy only has 8, but Erin Ambrose has 20. So the fact that Fortino stayed out of the box as much as she did, only getting 2 minor penalties, I think is a credit to her on just not only how good she is defensively, but how clean she is defensively. She's not tripping or hooking or slashing anybody. She's taking them out, pushing them to the outside as cleanly as any other defenseman can. And so congrats to Laura Fortino, and congrats to all three of the nominees for Defenseman of the Year. So as you can tell, if you haven't been able to tell already, which I'm sure you have, I'm kind of giving my personal input on each of the three nominees and kind of who I might pick. And to see who ends up winning the award at the end of the year. So we'll jump into goaltender of the year, and this one I think is the biggest one for me. Obviously, I am getting into the habit of saying my opinion before I get to the award. So let me say the nominees first. Alex Rigsby of the Calgary Inferno, which I mentioned. She was a rookie goaltender this year, played 17 games, 14 wins, just 2 losses, and 1 overtime loss. So Rigsby, again, as well, finished the season just a 2.04 goals against average and a .916 save percentage, which is pretty good throughout the CWHL. But somebody with absolutely incredible numbers, Emerence Mashmeyer, who's the second nominee in this category from Les Canadiens de Montréal. Mashmeyer finished off the regular season as the top goalie in the CWHL with 15 wins and ended the season first in goals against average with 1.45 and the highest save percentage of .935. Now, the third member of this category is Nora Ratu of the Kunlun Red Stars. Ratu played 20 games for Shenzhen, collecting 8 wins and 12 losses. So she finished the season third in the standings on goalie stats with a 2.46 goals against average and a .921 save percentage. Now, she's the defending winner of this award last year, but I really think it's going to go to Emerence Mashmeyer. It's really hard to argue with those stats. But somebody that I would have included in this category is Erica Howe. Now, I'm not 100% sure if there's a particular reason why she wasn't included or she wouldn't be able to be included in this category. When you look at the season that Erica Howe has had, she was second in the league in save percentage with a .924 save percentage, which is unreal. She was a little bit further down in goals against average with a 2.56, but to me, the save percentage is the stat that matters a little bit more, simply because you're looking at how many shots she's faced, and then how many of those, you know, how many of those she's stopping. So, you know, she did have 49 goals against, which was the second highest in the CWHL, but I mean, she faced the most shots in the league, 643 shots against. So Markham, despite having an incredible on paper defensive core, really wasn't preventing a whole lot of pucks getting through to Erica Howe, because of course she faced the most rubber by just under 40 shots. So and that's just in the regular season. That doesn't include the 3 playoff games where, she faced 34 to 43 shots on net. So for me, I would have certainly put Erica Howe in this category and maybe potentially have bumped maybe even Nora Ratu out of this category. Or if you only want to nominate one player per category, then I certainly would have nominated Alex Rigsby for Rookie of the Year, and I would have had Erica Howe in the Goaltender of the Year conversation, at least. I think it's fairly obvious who's going to win. It's going to be Emerence Mashmeyer. If it isn't, I will be shocked. But I would have had Erica Howe in this conversation because she really had a stellar year for the Markham Thunder. And I don't know, if she wasn't in net stopping as much rubber as she had, maybe the Markham Thunder don't even make the playoffs. Who knows? So that's my opinion there. Erica Howe has got to be in the Goaltender of the Year conversation. And we carry on to the Player Voted MVP Award, the Jaina Hefford Trophy. And there's 3 players in this category as well. And I think all 3 of them, again, have a very strong case for this award. Breanne Jenner is the first nominee in this category for the Calgary Inferno. She's had a career season with 32 points, and she just led the way for the Calgary Inferno. She finished 5th overall in scoring, so she really had a stellar season for the Calgary Inferno. Obviously a very good case for this award, but somebody else who's got a very good case for this award is Emerence Mashmeyer. Like we said, led the league in save percentage. She was the top goaltender in the league. There's no question about it. Four shutouts this in the regular season and two in the playoffs. She is so hard to beat. It is a treat to watch her between the pipes for sure. And the third nominee in this category, Marie-Philippe Poulin, because who else? Captain Canada for the MVP voted on by the players. She's led Les Canadiens to a Clarkson Cup final in every one of her four seasons she's played in this league. She became the fourth Canadienne to reach 50 points in a season, and she was the league's point leader. So there's a big case for her to get this award as well. And she actually won this award in 2016 when it was first, when it was in its inaugural year. So the first winner of this award is back again and could potentially win it for the second time. And finally, the Coach of the Year. We've got three nominees for Coach of the Year. Ryan Hilderman for the Calgary Inferno, obviously taking this team to new heights. I mean, they blew everybody out of the water. Just five losses in the entire regular season is absolutely incredible. So obviously he's up for Coach of the Year. Jim Jackson of the Markham Thunder taking this team back to the playoffs after their underdog season last year, just scraping into the playoffs and then making it all the way and winning the Clarkson Cup. They were back. Didn't make it to the Clarkson Cup this year, but still made it into the playoffs with, I think, a better season overall, actually, than they had last year. So he's up for it. And then the final nominee, who I think could be certainly the runner-up in this category, maybe even the winner, depending on how they want to look at it. Obviously, Ryan Hilderman is a strong candidate for this award, but Courtney Kessel of the Toronto Furies is the other nominee. In her rookie coaching year for the Furies, led them to a playoff berth, really got the best out of this team, I think. And it was really interesting to see just how exactly she used each of her players in every possible role and found out just exactly who worked well with who and where and when. And it all really started to come together for the Furies, particularly at the end when they needed it most. They willed themselves into the playoffs, and they were so close to knocking out the top team in the league. I mean, what a turnaround for the Toronto Furies, and obviously got to credit their GM, Sammy Joe Small, for that as well, bringing in Kessel and a whole new bench squad, really, and then all the players that Sammy Joe brought into the Furies as well to help out Courtney Kessel and really get this team a new start. And I really think that there's more to come from the Toronto Furies for sure. Now, of course, there are two other awards at the CWHL Awards, but we won't know who's going to get them until award day. We have the Humanitarian of the Year Award, and of course, we have the CWHL MVP Award that is voted on, I believe, by the media, similar to the Hart Trophy in the NHL. We don't know who's nominated for that one yet, but CWHL Awards will go down on Friday, and you can get tickets to the entire weekend, including the awards and the Clarkson Cup, by visiting thecwhl.com/ClarksonCup2019, and you can get tickets for the entire event. Go watch the awards, see who wins, get dressed up nice and fancy, and then head out on Sunday afternoon to the Coca-Cola Coliseum and watch the big game. And I'm sure as many players are going to be there as possible to cheer on their fellow league members and see who wins the 2019 Clarkson Cup. All right, there's a couple other things we got to talk about now, because of course, last week the Canadian World, or the Women's World Championship roster for Team Canada was announced, and you'll see a lot of familiar faces again on this one, not only from the not only from the rivalry series, but from last year in general, and also from the Olympics as well. This time, they've got a few members of college teams coming out, and a few young ladies making their debut, but I'll go right down the roster, top to bottom, starting with the forwards. Rebecca Johnston, Laura Stacey, Jill Saulnier, Melody Daou, who wasn't on the rivalry series team, mind you, Brienne Jenner, Sarah Nurse, Natalie Spooner, Emily Clark from the University of Wisconsin, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Lauren Gable from Clarkson University, Anne-Sophie Bette, Blair Turnbull, Jamie Lee Rattray, Jocelyn LaRocque, Bridget Laquette, Laura Fortino, Renata Faust, Aaron Ambrose, Jamie Bourbonnais from Cornell University, and Micah, I'm not 100% sure which one, so I apologize, but I'm going to say Micah Zandi Hart, also from Cornell University. So those are all your skaters, just in order from top to bottom there. And then the goaltenders, I mean, everybody knows who's going to start a net for Team Canada. It's Shannon Zabados. And Genevieve Lacasse will also be there. And Emerence Mashmeyer, of course. So let's go in-depth a little bit more on the five players that are not necessarily, well, there's four making their debuts and five who weren't, well, sorry. There's four players making their debuts and four players who weren't on the rivalry series roster. Well, five, but we all know who Melody Daou is, I hope, because she was at the Olympics as well. But let's start with, obviously, Emily Clark. I think a few of us have heard that name before as well. She's been in the spotlight for Team Canada for a little while. This is her fourth World Championship appearance, actually, and she was also a part of the 2018 Olympic team. Now, as far as her performance has gone this season, she's actually taken a slight step back. She's only got 27 points this year, despite coming off back-to-back 45-plus point seasons in the NCAA. But she was drafted 15th overall by the Boston Pride in 2018. So we can look to see her center likely, I would say, the third or fourth line of this World Championship hockey team. And, of course, Canada hasn't won the gold medal at the World Championships for quite some time. Emily Clark is sitting there with three silver medals at the World Championships. So herself among, I'm sure, every player on this team will be looking to get a gold medal for Team Canada. Now, let's look at the four that are making their World Hockey Championship debut. And let's start with probably the most impressive, certainly the most impressive one coming out of the college system, and that's Lauren Gable, the forward out of Clarkson University. Now, in 2018, she was the ECAC Player of the Year and actually beat out teammates Savannah Harmon and Shay Tiley. So there were three members of Clarkson University nominated for this award out of the entire ECAC. And of course, we all know who Shay Tiley is now, playing for the Toronto Furies, and Savannah Harmon as well, a name that we've heard as well from the American system. Now, Lauren Gable's having an incredible season. She set a new Clarkson University record for goals with 40, which broke her own record that she set last season with 36. She leads the NCAA in goals, is a 1.34 point per game player this season in the NCAA, and of course was drafted 8th overall by the Buffalo Buttes in 2018. Now, that's not necessarily a guarantee that she will play for Buffalo. She does have the opportunity to come up to Canada, come back home to Canada if she would like. Now, she's got 69 points this season in the NCAA, which is a bit of a step back, not really much of a step back. She had 75 last season, but she's got a few games left. She's only played 37, so she could still get a few more points and get herself back up to 75. But like I said, career high in goals for certain, and 29 assists on the season for her. So she's had a stellar, not just this season, but a stellar college career. And big things, I'm sure, to expect from Lauren Gable. The next one is Jamie Bourbonnais, the defenseman out of Cornell University. And there's actually two defensemen. The other one is Mika, of course. And it will be interesting to see whether or not those two end up actually playing on the same pairing together. I could see them end up being the third pairing for this team, Canada, depending on how well they do. But Jamie Bourbonnais, she's making her debut and has steadily improved each year in the NCAA, and she's actually set a new career high with 9 goals and 29 points. So she's continued to excel in points for Cornell, and she's actually third on Cornell in points and also leads the team with a plus 30. And then her teammate Mika, also making her world championship debut, also steadily improving throughout her career in the NCAA. She's also set new career highs this season, 4 goals and 21 points as a defenseman, 6th on Cornell in points as well. And finally, of course, the 4th player making their world championship debut, getting to pull the Maple Leaf sweater over her head for just the second time, well, in her professional hockey career at least, is Anne-Sophie Bette. Yes, she made this team. Congratulations to her. She was 2nd this season in CWHL points for the 2nd straight year, 48 points this year, which was a new career high for her. And she also led the league in assists with 30, which was another career high for her. So an absolutely incredible year for Anne-Sophie Bette, and certainly worth congratulations. All right, that just about wraps things up here. It was a hefty episode, I know, but there was a lot to cover for this one. But make sure you get yourself out to the Clarkson Cup or watch it on Sportsnet if you can't get out there. And before we get going, though, we do have to shout out our NWHL counterparts. The Isabel Cup was played this past weekend, and the Minnesota Whitecaps won it 2-1 in overtime off the stick of Lee Steckline, one of the stalwart American defensemen for Team USA, which, of course, we will definitely see at the World Championships. And that was the first season for the Minnesota Whitecaps in the NWHL. So history being made for the Minnesota Whitecaps, their first season with a championship. And we almost saw that with the Vegas Golden Knights as well. So new teams doing probably better than we've ever seen new teams do before. So once again, a congratulations to the Minnesota Whitecaps beating the Buffalo Buttes 2-1 in overtime for the championship. And one more shout out. Just want to shout out my Burlington Barracudas, the PWHL team out of Burlington that I was the PA announcer for the second season this year. It was a bit of a tough go in the playoffs. They unfortunately got swept by the Stony Creek Sabres in the first round, but I managed to get out to the third game to support them and try and will them to a win and get that fourth game back in Burlington, but it unfortunately wasn't to be. But still, a very exciting, very fun season. I had a wonderful time, and I hope to continue. It's unclear as to what exactly I'm going to be doing next season, but I obviously would love to continue being the PA announcer for the Burlington Barracudas, and just wanted to say thanks to them in case I don't. And so to publicly thank the Burlington Barracudas for another great season, and good luck to all their graduates that are going off to university, both in Canada and the United States. I hope to keep in touch with all of you and to see just where you end up. Hopefully, a lot of you end up right here in the CWHL. All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody. This has been another edition of CWHL Over the Glass, and I hope you enjoyed it. I know, like I said, it's a long one, but congratulations for sticking it out to the end, listening to me ramble on for this long. It's certainly something that my friends would say is difficult. So well done, and thank you for joining me for this CWHL Over the Glass episode. The next one will be a recap of the Clarkson Cup Final. Make sure you get there noon on Sunday, March the 24th. If you can't get there, watch it, or you'll be missing out on two of the top teams in the CWHL going at it for the 2019 championship. Thanks for listening. You can contact me at Captain Bapti on Twitter or send me an email, Jared, J-E-R-R-E-D, at barnburner.ca. And until after the final, have a good week.